Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. This is American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 10th of October, Anno Domini 2015. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Yes, Steve Ray, by the way. Dennis has graciously consented to come in and stand in for Steve, who is somewhere in the Midwest, one step ahead of the law.
Always happy to be here.
Always happy to have you. And we'll start with the news. Microsoft's new Edge browser has been largely ignored by U.S. users of Windows 10. Instead, Google's Chrome has shanghaied Windows 10's top browser spot. Although Edge, the default browser bundled with Windows 10, got a temporary boost when the operating system launched in late July, its share of all browsers on the OS quickly slipped from an early peak of about 16% to its current 12%. Chrome is the dominant browser on Windows 10 in the U.S., with a share slightly north of 70%. Quantcast measures web traffic at more than 100 million websites. Now, this is, by the way, strictly on Windows 10. They looked only at the data of who's coming into their websites using Windows 10. So if you're using Safari on a Mac,
or Safari on Windows,
or on Windows, unless it's Windows 10,
right?
Or if you're using a Chromebook or your tablet or phone, they didn't count you. It's only what came in from Windows 10. Quantcast measures web traffic at more than 100 million websites, primarily those in the U.S., to deliver audience and advertising data to brands and publishers. Like most analytics vendors, Quantcast can mine those data to break out browser and OS uses based on website visitors and page views. Quantcast said that Edge had failed to dislodge Chrome from its dominant spot. Slightly more than 70% of browser activity originating from Windows 10 was due to Chrome, an even higher percentage than on Windows 7 and 8, where Google's browser accounted for approximately 63% of all activity. While the raw number of Edge users had certainly grown as Windows 10 share has climbed, currently more than 15% of all Quantcast's Windows traffic comes from the new operating system, Edge's fraction of that increasing number has remained static. Mozilla's Firefox accounts for more browsing activity on Windows 10 than does Edge. Meanwhile, Internet Explorer has a tiny share of less than 5% on Windows 10, which is good. IE has been demoted to a supporting role on Windows 10 as an alternative when it's necessary to access sites and web apps written for that aged browser, mostly government websites written by idiots. Quantcast, you should be able to go with any website,
right?
Any web browser to any website.
Yeah.
The ones that say only works with Internet Explorer, those are done by lazy programmers using Microsoft's toolkit.
Or people with a time machine back to 1997.
Right. Quantcast data echoed figures provided by other metric companies, including U.S.-based Net Applications and Ireland StatCounter, both of which track Edge and other browsers. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Microsoft's Edge browser use is minimal. And your choices are, I left off the S on Microsoft's.
What?
Interesting. The choices are, I use it and I love it. I tried it. It's weird. Chrome forever. Firefox is king. IE is incredible. And something else. So far, Firefox is king is ahead with 17 votes. Trailing behind is Chrome. Far behind that is I tried it. It's weird and it's incredible. And something else. And nobody has used it and loves it. So far, we've got, 27 votes, 28 votes, and 30 votes. There we go.
Right.
We're up to 30 now. I'm really surprised that Chrome isn't higher, because most of the people who come to the Soundbites website are on Chrome. Anyway, I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you scroll, not yet. Now, if you scroll down on the right, you will see the forums. If you go to the forums and select poll discussion, You'll see 10 October 15, Microsoft's Edge browser use is minimal. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. We had, like I said, I checked the Google Analytics
right
pretty regularly, and so far, Chrome is the number one browser on all the websites that I run.
You know what I like about Chrome, and what I tell my clients about Chrome is that it's really nice because one of the things that Chrome does is they bundle Flash in the browser, and the second nice thing that they do is they always keep it up to date.
Yep.
Chrome has an auto-update mechanism inside that makes sure that it checks roughly once a day or so to see, hey, has Google released a fresher version of Chrome, one that is constantly being updated? And if there's a new version of Flash, they bundle that in as well, and they'll go fetch that for you. So you don't get the same messages you do with other browsers where you've got that Flash nagging screen that says, hey, you know, it's been, 3.5 days since you downloaded Flash and updated it. So we've got a new version out now. Maybe you want to go grab that one. And then you've got to try and update it and take the time to do this. No, just let Chrome do it in the background.
Yep.
And that's one of the reasons I really like it.
Yep. And all you have to do is restart and boom, you got the new stuff and you're good to go.
That's right.
Sometimes what you'll see is the little hamburger menu. For those of you who don't know, those three little bars in the upper right corner of the window,
right?
Those are called the hamburger menu. I don't know why they look more like a hot dog to me, but okay.
That's an actual industry term.
I understand that. I just don't know why it's hamburger.
The user interface professionals who deal with web user experience have deemed that the hamburger button, I guess because it's all stacked up,
I guess.
Like a triple patty hamburger.
Yeah, I guess.
I used that word with I have triplets at home. They're 11 now. They're in sixth grade, and they've been issued Chromebooks in our school district.
How cool is that?
It's both cool and frightening at the same time.
Yes.
To a guy who's into tech. But they've been taught that it's not the hamburger button. It's called the hot dogs.
See, it's hot dogs. I agree
so
with that.
The new generation is being raised that it's hot dogs. So us old timers will say hamburger button, and then you can imagine the triplets will sneak into whisper into each other's ear. He means the hot dogs.
Yeah, right. Well, they better be flexible because if they go out into the industry in
right.
any way,
it's the new generation gap, right?
Right. Exactly. All right. To the phones. Our first caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, guys. Probably a stupid question, but I'm working on a friend's laptop. She's running Windows 7. It's really messed up. I've done the Tango. She doesn't have a recovery disk. Can I just put Windows 10 on it and everything will be hunky-dory?
No.
No.
Does it have the prompt to put Windows 10 on it?
No.
Yeah. You need to wait for that. You don't have to wait for that.
I went and got it for another laptop I updated.
Right. You don't have to wait for that. But what you do want to do is there's a is this machine Windows 10 ready download.
Yeah. Windows compatible.
Windows compatible. Windows 10 compatible download from Microsoft. And you should run that first.
Yeah.
Because it depends on how much memory you have and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Microsoft says the minimum is 1 gig.
Yeah, she's got 4, so.
Okay. Well, 4 is really the minimum.
Yeah,
you know,
really.
With 1 gig, you're really measuring response time with a
boots.
Calendar. Yeah. and so if you've got Windows, if you've got 4 gig, you're okay. More is better. 4 is acceptable.
Yeah.
And what sort of processor is it running?
Intel.
No, I mean, is it single core, dual core, quad
single
core?
It's 6 years old, so it's...
Yeah, right. So her experience is going to be kind of slow.
Yeah.
Suboptimal.
One other caveat that I would add is, you got to check to make sure, that Windows 10 is compatible with that machine. The other thing is various software packages. If you quick go to their site and make sure that they are Windows 10 compatible.
Right.
Because you could get the operating system on there, and I've had a number of folks call me and have had to backtrack because their particular software packages aren't quite ready yet for Windows 10. So you spend all that time getting it ready, and you get Windows 10 on there, and one of her packages, and one of my clients was banking. banking program. They hadn't updated it yet.
Right. Sure. Now, it may work.
They said, we're working on it. Yeah. So you got to check at each of the sites to make sure.
And that's true for everybody listening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going to upgrade to Windows 10, before you do that, make sure all the software you use works. Now, if you're using a web browser, they're all going to work. You know, stuff like that.
Banking programs.
Right. Anything specialized.
Commercial off-the-shelf software that back in the day you would have gone to the store and picked up in a box.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the kind of thing you really need
Photoshop and all these others, you know what I mean?
But Steve, you could easily put Windows 10 on that machine, but just make sure...
You may not want to.
...ahead of time that it's going to work. It you know, the software that you check with will tell you how badly it's going to run.
Okay, part of the question is, she's got some sort of infection, I think, that I can't find.
Okay.
Well,
Windows 10 starts a whole new registry, right?
Windows 10, it depends on how you install it, okay? What you want to do, and this is for everybody who's thinking of upgrade, who wants to install fresh,
yeah?
First, you do an upgrade that registers that machine with Microsoft.
Right.
For Windows 10. Then you can reinstall as a fresh upgrade. But if you just install as a fresh upgrade the first time, sometimes Microsoft gets a little porky about, is this legitimate? They'll still let you run it, but they might want to charge you for it at a later point. So let them know that it's a legit upgrade. Then you can do a reinstall.
Okay. But I'll get a whole new registry. That I don't have to worry about anything that's sitting in the old one, then.
If you do a fresh install, yes.
Okay.
So do the upgrade. No, it's a wasted effort.
Yeah.
it'll probably keep the infection. And then do a fresh install, wipe out the drive, blah, blah, blah.
Sounds good.
And check all the software. Usually most sites will state their versions of Windows that they are still compatible with.
Right.
And and like Nick said, that goes with anybody. Anybody that's thinking of going to Windows 10, definitely. First, take the time. Make a list. Go down, make this list of all your software, like Dennis was saying, all the software that came out of a box that you installed, and go to their various sites and make sure that it's going to work with Windows 10. It'll save you a lot of grief and aggravation.
Well, now, does 10 have a compatibility mode?
I haven't played enough with it yet.
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't know.
That's a great question.
It's an excellent question. There's also a new program that I've been looking at. I just found it the other day, and I've just started playing with it. So I wouldn't recommend it to everybody, but you know kind of what you're doing. So there's a program called Dr. Web.
Okay.
At drweb.com, drweb.com, and it's an antivirus bootable system. So like some of the others, you create a disk and I'm pretty sure that's what it's called. And that lets you clean the machine out if you need to.
Okay. Thank you very much, John.
Yeah, that does cost money, but...
Now we're talking... I don't know.
Yeah, it's not that much.
Don't worry. Your time is worth more. So.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Thank you.
All right. I'm hesitant to really talk about it because, like I said, I haven't yet had a big chance to play with it.
Is there a clearinghouse for vendors to post to that lets you say, I want to install the following operating system, I want to look up these titles, and it will just give you kind of a green check mark or a red X?
That could be so
Microsoft
bad.
Microsoft has something like that, but it's certainly not complete.
Okay.
You know,
there is a similar website for the Mac called roaringapps.com. It was developed back when Apple was codenaming all of their OSs with big cats.
Yeah.
So they called it Roaring Apps, and you can look up the different versions there and see what might be compatible and what might not.
Cool. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, and that's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
That's the part I hate.
Yeah, that one hiccup.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Benright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Because Dennis is here,
Thank you. I'm sure
most of you have already
realized. That's why Sexy is back, people.
That's right. Sexy is back. Sadly,
I brought it with me.
Sadly, we have no YouTube channel today because that's...
I'll get Periscope started soon.
Steve, there you go. And you can't see us, which is why I felt free to dance during that musical interlude, but
he's got some moves, people.
We're delighted that Dennis is here bringing his expertise, and we thank him for coming in again.
Anytime.
He's worth every penny we're paying him.
That's right.
And I do want to thank personally all the folks who came to the wine and jazz and art event last night. It was just excellent. We had so much fun. The music, the White Hots were amazing. And they did a silent auction for some truly beautiful art. And the food was astonishing. But the big part, of course, was the wine and beer. I admit I indulged, and it was...
How big a part?
I'm a lightweight. I'm a cheap date, so...
Yeah.
But I had a glass of wine and a couple of... The same size, you know, the little glasses that the...
Yes, the sampler size.
The sampler size. I had one of those of wine and two of those of beer. Very, very tasty. Very nice stuff all the way around.
It was
a lovely evening, and it was a joy seeing many of the faces that go with the voices we hear every week. So we had a lot of fun, so thank you. Try not to hurt yourself. That's a microphone. It's been there every day since you started.
Yeah, I know. Well, at least I, you know, don't pull a move like, what was that movie? My Fat Greek Wedding?
Yeah, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, where she walks away with it.
Yeah, with the headset still on, and it yanks her... yanks her back down on the floor.
Yeah, but I noticed you tuck that thing into your belt so you'll have a warning before it happens.
Yeah, I learned.
Because you have done that.
Yes,
we all have.
It's like, whoa! Rip your head right back, because I keep my coffee away from the control board.
Right.
And I just inadvertently just go over and get it, and it's like, especially when I'm wearing different headsets.
Yeah. Right,
you're like
right.
A dog on a leash.
Yeah, my other one's a little longer.
Yeah.
This one, whoa.
Yep, yep. Oh, all right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark, also from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's up?
Hi, how are you?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm good. I called you a few weeks ago about my Windows 10 failing to do the download.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And I get that error code 802-40020. And you suggested that I leave the computer on for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
And I left it on for, probably a better part of 36 hours.
Yeah.
And nothing happened. And it still says in the upgrade window that it's validating Windows 10 for my PC. And look in the history, and back in September, you know, it was still trying to load it, but now it doesn't even try to download it anymore. I look in the Windows history, and it just stopped trying to download it.
Okay, so here's the deal. I did some research on this, actually. What that error code actually means is that the installation folder is corrupted.
Okay.
So here's how you fix that.
So that's the one where I go in and delete everything out of the installation folder, then run the command line prompt to do the update again?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because we had talked about that, like I said, back in September, and you said to try this first to see if it forces it to update, but it wouldn't. So
you've got the information on where to delete and what to type in. Okay.
Right. Yeah, I got that information. I found it just before I talked to you. But like I said, I wanted to run it past you first because that's something I wouldn't do on my own unless I talked to somebody who knows a little more than I do about it.
Yeah, that's what you do. Now, that download folder?
Yeah.
Leave the folder. Delete everything
in it. The contents, correct.
Right. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good. And then do that control WUA, whatever it is, control/update now. Do that, and that will theoretically run the update.
Right.
And then when actually that will set up the update, and then go to the control panel, Windows update, Windows 10 should start downloading from scratch.
Okay.
Hopefully without any errors.
There's another thing I wanted to say is my brother was in town for about 6 weeks, and he had done the installation before he came home here.
Yeah.
And when he went back, he noticed that he kept getting a Windows compatibility mode window coming up, that a program was running in Windows compatibility mode, and that it didn't tell him what program it was. It just kept throwing up this error message every once in a while that, you know, that it could, the system could become unstable.
Right. This is the thing I hate most about Microsoft. They tell you there's a problem. They don't tell you what program it's in. They don't tell you where to find it.
Everything's so incomplete.
Yeah.
And kind of ambiguous.
Yep.
And I went through mine because in my little Get Windows 10 logo, it comes up and it says apps. And I went in because it said one app is not compatible.
Right.
And it was this tune-up utilities program that I run. And he never got that error for his version of tune-up utilities. And I told him to uninstall it. He uninstalled it, and the message went away.
Oh, interesting. But he didn't get the message.
We're running the same software. We do a lot of CD, DVD labeling.
Right.
And there's a particular piece of software that says it's not compatible with Windows 10, yet it runs perfectly and no error messages.
Right. Generally, what not compatible with Windows 10 means is it hasn't been tested and verified.
Right.
Doesn't mean it doesn't run.
Right.
Means it hasn't been tested and verified.
Yeah, it's a misnomer.
Yeah.
Right. But that was a happy thing because
software wasn't
exactly cheap.
Yeah, right.
So not having to replace it if it's working okay is wonderful too.
Yep.
And there was just one more thing if you have another second.
Sure.
I wanted to warn some people. I had a neighbor come to me in a panic. He goes, "Have you updated the Windows 10 yet?" I said, "No, I'm having some issues with it." He goes, "Well, mine's ready to go." And I talked to a particular set of tech people at a particular store, and they told me if I did the update that I would lose everything on my computer. And I told him, well, that's not exactly true. I said, it depends on how you choose to do the update. And he was in a panic. And I just want to warn people that sometimes, you know, there are even people that supposedly know what they're doing don't always know what they're doing.
Well,
so take a lot of that with a grain of salt. And
exactly.
If you do hear something
that ticks me off.
I would suggest they give you a call.
Thank you. We appreciate that, Mark. Some people simply don't know. Other people will follow up a statement like that with, "So you should buy a new computer."
Yeah.
Yes. I'm sorry. We hear
it's
that.
Scare tactics.
Are they a sales guy? Yeah.
Exactly.
Keep that in mind.
Yeah.
What's their motivation?
So, yeah, and that really makes me angry. Back in the day, I sold computers and I never lied to anybody.
Exactly.
It's not worth it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'd rather have folks, you know, walk away from me, but they know at least when I, you know, they brought their computer in, I was honest with them, and I tell them, you know, all right, yeah, this is worth putting money into. Otherwise, no, don't. Go shopping around and see where you can, if you want, get a better deal.
That's the best business practice anybody can do, because my wife and I own our own independent clothing store, and you know, we're brutally honest with people. If we don't think something looks right, we tell them, you know, it doesn't look right. I don't think you should buy it.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
you know,
and a lot of people, you know, go, "Why'd you do that? You know, take the money and run." I says, "No, because those people will come back and they'll become my long-term customers."
Exactly.
The ones that you do that to usually get angry and they don't come back.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can make the sale today or you can make 20 sales over the next 10 years.
Right. Exactly.
You got to figure out what your reputation is worth.
Yep.
Exactly. You know, and that's one thing I always took pride in. You know, folks would come in and they'd want me to do this or that, and I'd say, "You know what? No. Yeah, I could take your money and do this, this, and this. Is it going to improve the performance on it? No. So you know what? Take that money that you would have given me and put it towards a new machine. Well, what do I owe you for your time? See me if you need other help."
Yep.
"You sure?" I go, "Yeah."
It's less annoyance for everybody involved.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry.
In the long run, a much better deal.
I guess my grandfather always taught me, you know, treat people the way you want to be treated, yep. You know, when sure. it comes to business and what you do and everything else.
Well, especially not just when, business.
You know, when I came to my woodworking and everything else.
Yep.
You know, he says.
I used to tell people back when I shaved, I used to say, you know what, I have to look at this face in the mirror every morning.
That's right.
And I don't want to be ashamed of what I'm seeing.
Yeah. Well, you want to maintain your professionalism.
Yeah. And like I say, my grandfather, because I'd watch him negotiating sometimes the furniture and that he would make. You know, and he always just instilled on me, you know, hey, and he'd barter. That's where I also learned barter.
Sure. Absolutely.
You know, and he'd sit there and say, yeah, he'll pay me back some other time. Yeah.
It'll all work out.
Yeah.
That's right. And
you
it's less work for everybody involved.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I learned an important lesson from your show is never be embarrassed to call and ask a question because there is no stupid questions. The only stupid questions are the ones that aren't asked.
There you go. Yeah. I've said
it's stupid to not ask.
Feel comfortable in calling and asking.
There you go. That's what we like to hear.
That's the one thing I have preached now for over 20 years.
Yeah.
That's right.
And it was a tagline on my messages for the longest time. The only dumb question is the one you don't ask.
Yep.
Well, thank you again.
Thank
guys.
You, sir.
Yep. I love your show, and I listen all the time. So,
thank you.
Thanks, Mark. We love to have listeners. Thanks.
That's great.
Loyal, longtime listeners are our favorites.
I usually tell people, some people are different than others. We can agree on that,
yeah.
right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
So some people have different habits and different interests, but when it comes to computers, I usually tell people, don't use a computer that's older than your car. You know, there are people who are willing to maintain an older mm-hmm. car and keep it on the road, and as long as they can just put a few $100 a year in maintenance into it, they're fine.
Mm-hmm.
There are other people who absolutely can't stand when anything's wrong with their car and want to have the best performance all the time and want to drive something that's nice and shiny and new. So when I say to people, don't use something that's older than your car, you know, all the people that are on 2-year leases on their car, maybe keep something a little bit more up to date. And if you can afford or desire to keep something running or enjoy using something that's a little bit vintage, you know, that's cool with you too.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. It depends on your level of tolerance.
That's right.
You know, I have a friend who's got a computer that's probably 12, 13 years old.
Yep.
And
they're probably fine with it.
He's perfectly, all he does is email. It's pretty much all he does. So
right.
It doesn't have to be a big, fast machine.
No, it could be a turtle.
Exactly right. And he's perfectly happy. And yet, and we both know people who, you know, the machine is 3 months old. It's crap. I have to
trade it in.
I can't wait for the new models to
That's
come
right.
out. Yeah.
Sort of like some folks with their iPhones.
Or, yeah, any device.
Yeah.
Any device at all. And you're right.
No.
There are those people who are just, I can't wait for
Apple
the new
people
iPhone to come
are,
out.
We're always the worst.
There are some cultists.
Big cult. Whether it was
the
newest
the
desktop or the newest laptop
right.
to the newest phone or whatever.
Back when the 5S, is that what the number was? The 5S came out?
That's it.
And now the 6S?
Sure.
People are angry because it's not different enough to declare to the world I bought the newest one.
Yes, those people can be confidently ignored.
Yes, they can. I'm not disagreeing with you, and I'm not painting all Apple people or all Apple products with that brush.
Right.
I'm just saying that every single operating system has fanatics.
Sure. Well, there are snobs in any
exactly.
Area.
That is exactly correct. And in this particular case, it just amuses me. How do I tell people? How do people know I've got the latest one? Wear a sign if it's that important.
Yeah, really.
Apple gives you two stickers in every box, man. You can put them anywhere you want.
And I have a suggestion.
What
I meant by that was on the back of the phone and on your forehead. That's what I meant.
Something like that.
Yeah.
That'll work.
We do. There are fanatics in every group. I've been dealing with Linux fanatics all my life.
Oh, sure.
I actually had one recently because I was taking a laptop to class, and the person came up to me and said, "How come you're not carrying a Chromebook?" I said, "Because I just thought originally I was going to be teaching Visual Basic, so I've got this Windows laptop."
Yes, good old Visual Basic.
And when it came time to just to actually teach something else instead, I just kept that laptop in my hand because it was in my head that that's the one I was going to take to school.
Right.
Because I'm pretty much agnostic. I don't care. Is this laptop going to do what I need to do today? I'll take it. I don't want it to sound like I've got a panoply of laptops waiting for me to just pick one up and go somewhere, but I do have a couple. I have a Chromebook. I have that. I bought that Windows laptop specifically to teach Visual Basic, which I'm not doing now.
But that's okay, because this is the year, people, of Linux on the desktop.
And yes,
you can believe that.
This is the year.
We mean it this time.
Here it is. This Chromebook is Linux on the desktop.
Well, yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Now I'll finish doing that later.
Okay.
In the meantime, I will say, ha, ha, ha. Here we go. This is another one of those things where it's like, yeah, who cares? Both the iPhone 6S and the iPhone 6S Plus are powered by Apple's latest chip, the A9.
Right.
Apple suggests the A9 offers significantly more processing and graphical power than its predecessors, but there is a sting in the tail for some iPhone users' batteries thanks to Apple sourcing its A9 chips from two different manufacturers. The A9 chips used by Apple appear to offer two different levels of performance depending on the manufacturer of the component. Those manufactured by Samsung appear to be drawing more power and offering a shorter battery life than those manufactured by TSMC. Last year's A8 chip was manufactured by TSMC, while the previous 64-bit A7 chip was manufactured by Samsung. Rather than select either company for the iPhone 6S family, Apple has decided to take on the technical challenge of working with two different sizes and designs of A9 chip, which was insane on their part. X-rays of the new hardware from Cupertino show two different sizes of chips. Samsung's die is 96 millimeters squared, while TSMC's die is 104.5 millimeters squared. Companies also use different manufacturing processes. And the two chips have different levels of ultimate performance. Details are still being collated on various forums and websites across the internet, but the theory coming through is that Samsung-manufactured A9 chips are generating more heat and drawing more power than the TSMC variants. Benchmark tests in some cases are reportedly showing a difference of up to 2 hours of battery life. These tests all focus on the ultimate performance of the chipset, pushing Apple's hardware to the edge of the performance envelope. There's no solid data on real-world performance of the two chipsets, and there's every possibility that Apple's performance specifications demand a similar utilization of resources during mixed usage from its suppliers. This is not a unique problem. Even individual chips from the same production line can offer a range of performances. Apple may have complicated the process by going with two different manufacturers, but what it does do is offer users a small insight into some of the manufacturing issues around modern computing devices. To paraphrase George Orwell, it's likely that all iPhones are equal, but some iPhones are more equal than others. So which matters more to you, battery life or chip speed? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Those phone numbers are also available on our website, soundbites.org, if you didn't quite catch them, and also, of course, on the jazz901.org website.
That's right. Yeah, I tend to think that my phone is probably spending the vast majority of its time waiting for me.
Yes.
And it's probably powered down into a low power state. I'm not too worried about it.
Well, and this is what I keep telling
people. And
Apple's
trying to sell so many phones in a weekend. What, they just set another record of how many millions of phones are shipping out over two and a half days?
Yep.
That maybe the suppliers just can't keep up. And if anybody is going to hold suppliers to a high standard, I suspect it's Apple.
Oh, yes,
and they're not,
definitely.
They're simply not going to accept the chips to put into phones if they are not meeting Apple specs.
Well, and that's just it. And again, it's a tempest in a teapot.
Right.
And this goes right back to the Fanatics.
Sure.
Are these two phones generally equivalent day to day? Yes. If you run a benchmark, is one going to beat the other? Yes.
Right.
But how many people run a benchmark every day?
But which ones, they know.
Which one's
going to
let me launch more birds at pigs?
Well, exactly. and it won't. It'll still be waiting 90% of its time.
Right. They don't
care. One phone will wait 92%. The other one will wait 91%.
The other thing, though, is the sellers. You know, I mean, let's face it. You know, a number of various carriers right now are sitting there saying, well, you do this and you can upgrade for free every year now and get the latest iPhone.
Yeah.
So they're pushing, you know, getting this new
product. For $20 a month, do the math.
Yeah. You're going to pay.
Yep.
One way or the other. I mean, that's just a fact of life.
Yep.
You're not going to get it for free. But, you know, again, they're pushing it because that's how they make their money.
Right.
Yep. That's exactly right.
That's what it's all about.
And when it comes to benchmarks, well, you know, you could always just ask VW about how that's going.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, they're not the first, and certainly the computer industry has done it too. There were a couple of graphics chips back in the day,
right,
that were designed
to score
notice
well.
You were running a benchmark,
right,
and then change the way they worked.
Yes, to be more efficient and
yep.
score better on that benchmark.
Yep.
Right.
But yeah, so I love that story, not because of, you know, it inherently shows Apple has done something wrong or whatever. Just the silliness that people go to in terms of playing with their machines. 99% is still 99%. And the 1% difference, that's at the chip speed. You aren't going to notice it. Trust me. That's what I tell people about laptops. Well, I bought this laptop because it's 4% faster than that laptop.
Great.
What that means is that laptop is now waiting 4% more for you to type
a key. Show me what you're making with it. That's what I tell people.
That's right. If what you do is high-end graphics all day long and you're designing something and drawing on the screen and doing all this stuff, you need a super fast chip to keep up with you.
Or
but
that's
if what
another
you're doing
good
is
one
answering
too.
Email, you're an idiot. Just buy something.
And that's another good point. They'll sit there and, you know, push the point. Well, do this many pixels, you know, colored pixels. The human eye can only see so many anyway.
That's right.
And you're not going to notice the difference in shade, say, in this magenta versus the other one.
Well,
from one phone to the other?
Exactly.
I'm sorry. Hello?
And the same thing with your cell phone's camera.
Oh, sure.
This one takes 170 billion pixels, and this one only takes 160 billion pixels. Yeah. You can only see 120 billion pixels.
Yeah. Right.
So, what are you going to do with them? Well, I'm going to put them up on my website.
Yep.
Where they're at 96 billion pixels.
Yeah.
So what?
You know,
what,
Facebook is downsampling everything you put up there. So
that's right.
Because
exactly.
They don't want to have to serve it.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. So yeah. All right. Back to the phones.
All right.
Our next caller is Sal from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Sal. What can we do for you?
Oh yeah, just listening to your talk on the different chips that are available in the iPhone. It becomes one of those things where it becomes a nice draw for hits on the website.
Yeah, exactly.
I think
anything with Apple in a headline.
Exactly. This new chip is so fast. And unless they're really, really taxing it, you're not seeing differences in between the two. And, you know, battery life, it depends on how you're using it that day. Benchmarks, you know how it is.
Yeah.
Right.
You can do a lot with manipulating things to make a benchmark look good or bad or however you want to do it.
You're absolutely right, Sal. If you didn't read the story and didn't know there were two actual chips,
you wouldn't know.
Right, and you put your phone next to Dennis's, and you had one and he had the other, you couldn't tell the difference.
Right. No,
and really, that's the bottom line, isn't it?
And even later on in subsequent reports are talking about it, it's really no big deal. It just became something they had to, every new iPhone, they find something to make some big scandal for.
Well, and Dennis is absolutely right. You know,
you hear that?
Somebody noticed that this was there and actually reported it as a fact, which it is.
Right.
And then somebody else said, "Here's clickbait."
Right. Nobody said, "So what?"
Right. Right.
Yeah. Which they should have.
Well, yes.
Yes. But you can't drive page views that way.
Yes. And in fact, I run a news site at asknick.com.
What's that site again?
Asknick.com.
Ah.
And this morning's headline is, "It doesn't matter which A9 chip your iPhone has, get over it."
Yes. Go plan for your retirement or something.
Something
important.
Right, which leads to my favorite story. And under my Apple, in my Apple section, I did indeed report about the, I did link to a story about the two different chips. But, you know, this is the headline. It doesn't matter which one your phone has.
Right.
And so, at asknick.com. But the... fact is, you're absolutely right, Sal. It doesn't matter.
No, you're not seeing it.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thanks
for calling.
Sure. Bye.
Thanks. Yeah, and he's absolutely right. Unless you're running the benchmark, if, you know, there are people whose job it is to obsess over hardware.
Yeah.
I suspect that nobody listening is one of those people.
You think?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. So ignore the benchmarks, ignore the hype.
And again, those benchmarks, it's all the way they pull in that data and the way they want it to interpret it,
right,
so it benefits what they want to try to profess,
right,
that, you know,
sure,
is, oh, the latest and greatest thing that you can't live without.
Right.
They're not going to show you bad data and say, oh, yeah, get this.
Well, yeah, the first-party vendor is going to show benchmarks.
Exactly.
Show
they're just going to skew
right
it any which way you can. And it's
and
just
independent vendors are going to look at it the way they want to.
Mm-hmm.
And then people who analyze that will look at it the way they want to. So
and
remember where the lens is.
Right. And those clickbait stories, as you said. There seems to be a difference between two different types of A9. Oh, what a great headline. Apple screws the world.
Yeah, by somebody getting shafted?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Exactly. So yeah, you take all this stuff, you know, with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
You always do.
The story should be, Apple is selling so many products that they can't find a single vendor to ship all of their chips, that they have to go to multiple vendors.
Right. That's the story.
Yeah.
But that's not the story. The story is two different chips. One's a little slower. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yes. Oh.
Yes. Make people worry about something that does not matter.
I update.
Again, confidently ignored.
Yes. I update Ask Nick several times a day. Well, depends on the day.
Yeah.
On average.
On average. I try to make the headline story the thing that I find most interesting that day.
Right.
But in the back of my head, there's always this thing that said, you know, if I picked this one instead, I'd probably get more clicks.
You should start a parallel site. It's just all clickbait.
Don'tasknick.com.
Or asknickniq.com.
I'm just putting that stuff out there because I know that people have a lot of questions and a lot of needs, and so I'm trying to give them one place they can go to get all their tech news all in a list, and then you can just click on it and go
right
for it.
And they really like having your opinion and seeing it through your point of view, because people trust you, and they know that you're going to call a spade if something doesn't really matter. You know, you'll mention that.
Just to let you know, that was Sal calling back.
Yeah.
Just to inform you guys, he has the fastest chip in his phone.
Congratulations, Sal.
Hooray.
You're better.
Yeah, get the bumper sticker.
You're clearly better.
The tattoo.
I'd rather be driving my iPhone 6.
Better, better, handsomer, and everything else than the other Apple 6 owners. 6S owners. Yeah, yeah. With bragging rights, you know, and you know what? It's bragging rights. That's
you know,
all.
I had, switching gears, I had an adventure this week where somebody came in with some old Microsoft Word files.
Ooh.
And you're going to like this, Nick, and I saved this story just so I could use this.
Oh, excellent.
When I came to find you. We used, wait for it, drum roll, OpenOffice.
Yeah.
To convert them.
Say, absolutely.
They were old files from Microsoft Word 1998.
Wow.
Yeah. He still had them, still needed them.
Yep.
He was getting a new machine. It was going to run the latest OS and the latest version of Word, which for the Mac is Office 2016. And he couldn't open them. The new fresh version of Office would not play nicely with these files from 1998. So he thought about it.
There's a surprise.
Yeah. But normally Microsoft was always known for their backwards compatibility as far as doc files.
They tried to, and I went to the Open Dialog, and I was expecting to find that drop-down menu that says, is it any one of these two dozen different variations that we know how to deal with? They don't supply that drop-down
menu. So just go to RTF?
The old version saved in its own
folder. No, I mean when you convert them to OpenOffice, RTF?
I opened them in OpenOffice. Yep. It took them all, and this particular document had a bunch of footnotes, and that was the part he was really interested in keeping. And OpenOffice opened them. The footnotes were maintained. We saved them as a .doc, I believe, or possibly a .docx.
Yep.
And then Office 2016 had no problem whatsoever with them.
Yep.
But it really saved the day. And once again, a big shout out to all the open source fans that tool really saved us. Even with two versions of the same product from the same manufacturer, admittedly almost 20 years apart, but Still, it was nice to have that tool to act as an intermediary to convert from one to the other.
Yeah, OpenOffice or its new version, LibreOffice, LibreOffice.org, it is equivalent to Office, to Microsoft Office. It's got a word processor and a spreadsheet and a presentation package. It's absolutely free. It does everything 95% of you would ever want to do. And most people don't run it because, you know, God forbid, it's not actually for Microsoft. Listen, we're going to take a slightly longer break. You seem to have wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. But you're going to get an opportunity to do it again because none of us really are that bright. So after this slightly longer break, we'll be back with a whole lot more of Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 59 minutes after the hour. You're only halfway through the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we are trying to figure out what the heck Periscope... Oh, no, I just hit the little red button.
I haven't used it on Android. We'll have to figure that out.
All right.
It'll make for great radio.
It'll make great radio. But in the meantime, I'm going to... oh, look, there's a
all right, so while you're doing this, I'll describe what we're doing. So Periscope... And its competitor, Meerkat, are tools that you run on your phone, and it uses the camera on your phone and the bandwidth that that you're connected to, whether that's Wi-Fi or your cellular bandwidth, and it allows you to record video and then broadcast it to anyone who is subscribed to you. And if you are subscribed to somebody who is now recording, you'll get a little chime on your phone that says, ding, and soon it'll say, Nick Francesco is recording and broadcasting. And it's sort of like having your own TV studio in your pocket, as well as your own broadcasting network, which is kind of neat. And I've been doing a Periscope here in the studio, and we've got three people watching so far. If you want to check it out, you can follow me on Twitter. I am at WildEep, all one word, WildEep, and see what Periscope is all about. It's available for both iOS and Android. And it's kind of fun. There are lots of people that talk about things that they enjoy or what have you. So it's sort of like live YouTube. You could think of it that way.
Cool. I'm trying to do it through my phone and in here because we're in kind of a Faraday cage.
Right.
It's too slow. So at the next break, I'll log into the Wi-Fi.
Right. Yeah, we'll get that taken care of.
And do that. But right now, I can't do that. Instead, we'll go to the phone, and we'll talk to James from Rochester, New York. Welcome, James. What's up?
Oh, hello. How do you remove the favorites list from Chrome to import a new list from Internet Explorer?
Ah, okay. So you have a list in Internet Explorer right now.
One in Chrome, but I want to get rid of the one in Chrome.
You want to replace what's in Chrome with the list from Internet Explorer?
Yes.
Okay. Oftentimes, what I would do is I would make a folder in Chrome in the bookmarks area.
How do I delete the ones that are in there already? I want to get rid of them.
Well, are you on a Mac or a PC?
PC.
Okay.
Laptop.
Is there a bookmarks menu in Chrome?
Yes, okay. In the Chrome.
Usually you can right-click that and get something either like the bookmark manager or the ability to edit bookmarks.
Okay, right, so what you do
manager,
is...
Yeah.
Yeah, what you do is in the upper right corner, there's that
hamburger menu.
Yep.
You can click bookmarks, then bookmark manager.
Yep.
And then pick a folder. And there's a drop-down arrow at the end of the row, and in the menu that appears there, you can click delete. I don't honestly know if you can do that. Wow.
Well, on a manager, there's a thing that says imported from Internet Explorer. Do I just delete that, extension?
Hold on a minute. Yeah. Let me look at that.
I just don't want to goof it up.
I'm not sure where you're seeing that. So you have a set of bookmarks that are
in Chrome,
a set of bookmarks that say imported from Internet Explorer.
Yes.
If those are the ones you want to get rid of,
yes,
then what you do is you go into the bookmark manager and highlight them.
Yep.
Way over on the right, you'll see a drop-down menu.
Yep.
Click on that and select delete. And that whole folder will go away.
Right. I just got rid of them. Now, how do I import the new ones?
So now from
Internet Explorer.
Right.
Usually, the first time you launch Chrome, it'll ask, would you like to import bookmarks?
Well, on bookmarks, it says import bookmarks and settings.
Right, and you can do that. So to import bookmarks from Internet Explorer, right, from the bookmarks menu again, import bookmarks and settings.
Yep.
Select the program, because you'll get a list of the programs that are available.
Mm-hmm.
Click import, and then click done. And when they appear, if you haven't got any bookmarks at all in Chrome, they'll import directly to the bookmarks bar to look exactly the same. If you already have bookmarks in Chrome...
I got the little box that says import bookmarks and settings from Internet Explorer. And it says select items to import, browsing history, favorites, saved passwords, and search engines.
Yep. Really what you want are the favorites. Those are your bookmarks.
That's right.
Yeah. How about the browsing history? No?
Your choice.
Oh, okay.
Probably not necessary.
Passwords?
Same. Might not be a bad idea because...
Because I go back and forth.
Yeah, unless you remember the
passwords.
No, I don't. As I did to Twitter.
That's right.
You can say yes to those. That would be fine.
Yeah.
And again,
right,
if you have no bookmarks,
I used the tiny sidebar.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they came.
Yeah.
I think they did.
There you go.
Oh, okay. One other question on the email. I keep getting mail delivery system failure for emails that I didn't even send.
Yeah, that happens a lot. What's happened is somebody in your list of friends, somebody who has your email address, has been hit by a virus. It randomly picked your email address to pretend to send stuff from.
The password
doesn't matter. Yeah. It's not you. It's one of your friends that's got you on their list.
Oh, okay.
And you're getting sent. Yeah, there's nothing you can do about it, and don't worry about it.
Yep, just delete the message and move on with your life.
Very quick.
Yeah. On the print preview on a couple of the sites, it doesn't show the whole page. It's just like a thin column that prints on the right-hand side about 3 inches wide. How do you make it print the whole page?
Every website can control how much of their page you can print. There's nothing you can change about that.
Yeah, I'm printing the whole page, but... on the final outcome, it's only like 3 inches wide on each sheet, like the right-hand side.
And so you're not seeing the whole page?
No. I end up getting the whole page on 5 or 6 sheets, but it's only a 3-inch wide thing as opposed to a normal 8x11.
Page 7? Is that in the browser?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, it should. Well, theoretic. Now, this doesn't happen on every website, just on some of them.
Correct. I'll play around with it then.
That generally, it's one of two things.
Mm-hmm.
Every website can set what and how much of their page you can print. Mm-hmm. They may have it set wrong.
All right, I'll check it.
If so, there's nothing you can do to change that.
It is what it is.
Because if it were every site, then it would certainly be your browser.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Okay.
All right, thanks. I don't have a better answer than that, I'm afraid. So, that's an issue.
Printing from the web has always been kind of a challenge. And even for the last, you know, 15 years or so, the people who design things for the web don't often think about what's this going to look like if somebody tries to lay it down on paper.
Right.
And the browser folks try to do their best to guess how to best support most websites. But the trouble with the web is the people who make the tools to view it aren't the people who are making the websites, and the people who make the websites aren't the people making the browsers.
Right.
And what's there interesting, isn't a standard for that.
Yep. And what's interesting is under CSS, you can actually design a different page to print than is shown on the screen.
Emphasis on can.
Well, and if you look at Security Tango, when you go to print, for example, the Windows page, you don't see the ads, you don't see the background, you don't see the pictures.
Which is nice.
All
it
you do is get the checklist you're supposed to get.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of sites don't do that.
Right.
And it is a problem.
What
All right.
What you can try is printing to PDF and then turn it into a PDF file that you can see on your screen.
Right.
And
sometimes
if it looks good,
happens, yes.
then just print the PDF.
Right.
Otherwise, you know, go back and try something else. That's
going to
save
least,
you a lot
you don't
of ink
waste
and paper.
Paper. Right. Exactly.
Right.
All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Don from Greece, New York. Welcome, Don. What's up?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Peachy, you?
Just great. Listen, I have a multifunction printer that's only registering as a printer. The fax and the scanner don't show up. And I had this printer connected to an XP machine that I had, and everything worked fine. But I got a Windows 7 device now, or computer.
Yeah.
And it only registers as a printer.
Okay, that's a driver issue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I've gone to the Brother website to download the latest driver.
Yeah.
And also the application software suite.
Yep,
good.
And it still does the same. And I tried that both on an Ethernet connection and also on the USB connection.
Now, when you did this, was the printer still there? Is it an old device?
No, I deinstalled the driver and the application software before I tried to do both types of connections.
All right. One thing I might suggest is go back to the Brother website, because I have a Brother multifunction printer as well, and there were actually two sets of drivers up there for mine.
Oh.
One was strictly the printer driver, and the other was, I think it was called the multifunction driver, or I think that's what it was called. I don't remember off the top of my head. It was a while ago. But I remember almost downloading
right
the
now.
One. Exactly. Thank you very much. I've told you what this is.
that's why I mentioned it.
I almost downloaded the printer driver, and I thought, wait a minute. What's this other driver? And I looked at it more closely and realized I needed the other driver. So I would suggest going back to the website and seeing if, in fact, you find a better driver for it. Also, if you do uninstall the driver again, reboot after you uninstall the driver. And don't let Windows install a driver for you, because it will install only the generic printer driver.
Yeah.
Hey, how do I stop that? Just turn off the printer when I do the restart?
Yeah, what you want to do is, when you do the restart, unplug the printer.
Okay.
Yep.
And then restart without the printer, install the driver you actually want, and then reboot and plug the printer in.
Well, normally when you're installing that driver, at some point in time, it will prompt you to plug in the printer into that USB port.
So
that way it'll continue to, it'll report back, oh, you've got this particular multifunction, printer.
Right.
And it'll continue on to add the additional driver. So yes, like Nick said, unplug it, shut it down, unplug it, and go ahead, leave it unplugged. Turned on still, but plug it in once it prompts you to, because you'll see it all of a sudden, an image like your computer and the printer, and it's like going back and forth trying to make the connection once you plug it into the USB port.
Right. And don't use the add a printer method.
Okay,
use the actual vendor software.
Okay.
Right.
Okay, that sounds good. I'll give those a try.
All right,
excellent.
Good luck.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you.
Another satisfied customer.
Yeah, and you're right. Printing can be an annoyance. I just, like I said, I bought a multifunction printer. I'm connecting with Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. I had a great printer, an old HP.
Oh, yeah. You can't kill those.
Probably 15 years.
They're tanks.
Exactly.
So what finally took it out?
Well, nothing took it out except that it was only parallel.
Ah, yes.
I don't have a... And yeah. I was running it off an old laptop under Linux. I had it set up as a print spooler, essentially.
Sure.
And then that died. That old laptop died.
Yeah.
I don't have anything with a parallel port anymore.
You couldn't put a JetDirect card in it or anything?
I thought about that, and then I thought, you know what?
Elaine
has always wanted to be able to fax and blah, blah, blah,
yeah.
and blah, blah.
And it's only doing 8 pages a minute. And
it's only doing 8 pages a minute, which was blazing fast,
yes.
15 years
yes,
ago.
Yes, it was.
So
mm-hmm.
I bought her this multifunction Brother, and it's great, and it's wireless, and it was much easier for everybody to set up. And,
right. And you could probably print from your phone now.
I print from my phone. Here's the funniest thing. I had not installed the copy software. You know, because you can.
Oh, yeah.
It's not,
you can put,
it's fast
scan
to copy
it. And
right.
then print it immediately.
I did not install the scanning software on Linux yet, and Elaine needed something scanned instantly. And I had actually installed it on my phone. So I scanned to my phone and then...
Then printed from your phone?
No, she didn't want to print it. She wanted it electronically.
Oh.
So I emailed it to her.
Oh, beautiful.
From the phone. I never touched my computer. Now that I say that, I do not think to this day I've ever installed the software on Linux.
we also got a Brother printer lately. And like I mentioned before, my kids have all got Chromebooks. And one of the first things we did was try and make it so that they could print at home.
Yep.
Google's got this set up now. What do they call it? Google Cloud Print. Yeah. So you have a machine and it acts kind of as an intermediary. So they can send stuff from their Chromebooks through the internet, through Google, back to my house. In a different room, and
yep.
And then their printouts come out. But it also means I can print to it from my laptop wherever I happen to be and send ghost messages to my wife on her desk.
Very nice. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, Nick Francesco, you. 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we are in the process of exchanging Periscope.
Periscope feeds, yeah.
Feeds. Dennis is running out of battery, and I'm at, if you go to Twitter, if you're following at Nick Francesco,
that's right.
You should, and the same obviously on Periscope, you should be able to follow me. And I just learned not to try to prop my phone on my power button.
Uh-oh.
Did it
go to sleep?
But I put it there and it started to slide down. I thought, no, that I really need to
no.
put this on the other side. Yeah. Exactly. Well. Exactly. So, yeah, that's where we stand right now.
Yeah, be sure to check it out.
Nobody's following me so far.
Oh,
it does
on,
say live on Periscope. Look
we
at
can,
that.
We can do better than this.
We can do better than this, people.
Go to Nick's Twitter feed and see if you can
right.
see if you can follow him on Periscope.
Now, at Nick Francesco, 3 minutes ago, I went live on Periscope, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the ability to broadcast what your phone is currently recording and send that out to everybody who is interested in seeing it.
Now, all I did was start it. I didn't do any sort of thing to say... save it or any of that stuff. Does
okay.
that automatically?
You know, I've only used this for about a week or two, so
I'm
still learning, but...
I guess we'll find out.
We'll find
it doesn't
out
matter. Nobody's following me.
That's okay.
So that's all right. I don't
You
care.
Could be the first, you lucky listeners.
That's right, listeners.
Wouldn't
you
like
be
to be the
first to follow me on Periscope?
Do you have
Whoopee!
Some more news? Might be time for another news story.
That's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
Reading articles on a mobile browser probably takes longer to load than you wanted. First world problems. Oh, three people are suddenly following me. Thanks.
And they posted a message on the little feed? What does
yeah,
it say?
Yeah. They said, I'm following you, Nick. Thanks, paper server. So I got three people following now, and we're doing Periscope. Four people.
Here they come, everybody.
I gotta
get ready, America.
Read this article, but thank you. Fill it up. Reading articles on a mobile browser probably takes longer to load than you wanted. Google is hoping.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's Google Alphabet.
Google. Google is hoping it can change that with its introduction Wednesday of a technology called AMP, or Accelerated Mobile Pages,
okay,
which was created to load up articles nearly instantly on a smartphone. Some of the organizations already dabbling with AMP include Twitter, The New York Times, The Guardian, BuzzFeed, Vox Media, and Daily Mail. The technology, first reported last month, is just being previewed for now, and will launch publicly at a later date. The web today, particularly in a mobile environment, is not really satisfying users' expectations, said Richard Gringas, Google's head of news. In other news, Google has a head of news. It's not as fast as it should be. Pages load slowly, sometimes erratically. It's not ideal, and mobile advertising can at times be annoying. Those times when it's actually you're looking at it. Looking to bolster web browsing on mobile devices, the company created AMP. It's essentially standardized web pages that include best practices Google developed to cut down on load times. For instance, an AMP-powered page won't load an image or video until the user scrolls down to it, allowing a web browser to load the top of a page much faster. Google will scroll down to it, allowing Google will also cache pages on its top-of-the-line servers, which are built to handle 6 million queries a second. Let that sink in for a bit.
How many?
6 million.
Per minute?
Per second.
Oh.
That's a lot of queries. Helping speed up the time it takes to retrieve an article. AMP could be used for any kind of content on just about any device, but Google chose to focus on news articles on mobile first. We think that's the biggest pain point where it can make the most impact, said David Bespris, a Google Vice President of Engineering. The end result presented in a demo on Wednesday allows users to flip through stories about any given subject with almost immediate load time of each page. Google makes a big chunk of its mobile ad revenue from web browsers, so improving that experience is critical to helping Google remain the leading moneymaker in mobile ads. Looking to chip away at Google's top position, Facebook, Snapchat, and Apple have all come out with their own projects to serve up news articles faster with their own apps. For example, Facebook's Instant Articles hosts news articles, allowing for speedier load times. Google's AMP is an open source project that's available to news sites without any specific partnership with Google. So, do you read news more often on your phone or on your desktop? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
This sounds like an extension of what the Apache web browser has been doing for years, with an attempt to compress things before they send them over the wire to you, and then your browser decompresses them in an effort to make things faster.
Well, it does compression, but it also does stripping out of ads and sends them second.
Yeah.
So you get the text first.
Right.
And stuff like that. And they're doing it first with news, which theoretically, and I apologize for showing you so much of the roof, but that's the way that's going to sit. they basically are trying it with news first, because news is mostly a good combination of text and video and pictures.
It is.
So by using that as their test bed, they'll clean it up before they start offering it randomly to the other. Because right now, if they screw it up, they just screw up their news feed.
Right.
Right. If they make it a public product and they screw up your website, that's going to make you a little porky, I think.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's the way that works. So it's a pretty neat technology, actually. I've seen it in action on their news site. Dave and I were actually talking about this morning. We both have the Galaxy S5.
Yep.
We cannot remove Flipboard.
Yeah.
Or any of other bloatware that Samsung loaded onto our phones, which is one reason I'm out of space, because Samsung took so much of it.
Right. Yeah. So Samsung, it's not your wireless provider.
No, it's the manufacturer.
It's the manufacturer itself.
Yeah, the manufacturer of the phone.
Samsung. Apple does that too on the iOS. They've got some stuff that they really like, and there is no way to delete it.
Well, that's why my next phone is going to be a pure Nexus phone.
Yeah, that's what I hear, is that the people who really want that stripped down, it's not there unless you put it there, stuff are going with the Nexus flavor of the Android phones.
Yep. That's my next phone. I'm done with this nonsense. It's bigging me in the butt, and I'm done.
Yeah, I'd like to say that too, but my biggest thing, though, is what my biggest criteria is battery life.
Sure.
Yep. And that's where I've been arguing with some of the other folks, and you and I were talking about this before. Oh, folks are sitting there, well, I got the new S6, Galaxy 6.
Right.
Yeah, look at how much thinner it is. I go, yeah, really? I says, yeah, and the battery's shorter. Oh, no, it's not. It's a lot more powerful, and the battery will last that much longer, I was told. No. To lose space, they had to, you know, to make it that much thinner, and you're only talking millimeters. Millimeters, folks.
Yeah.
Difference. But those millimeters that they had to shave off so you could have a little bit thinner and rounded edges cuts on the battery life. It's got to come from somewhere.
Yeah, that's not magic. It's not magic. So,
yeah, you either get more efficient chips, which all of the manufacturers are trying to do as quickly as they can, or you get more battery in terms of cubic inches or cubic millimeters in this case.
Right.
I know Apple's been working on that considerably on their phones. In fact, they've made their batteries even smaller in their next phone, and they because of the efficiency in the chips, they're able to keep roughly the same amount of battery life. And they've been doing it in their laptops too. You know, if you look at the inside of a MacBook Air for instance, it's it's 80% battery. And the entire motherboard for the entire laptop is about as big as a Snickers bar on the inside. And the iPads have been that way since the inception.
Mm-hmm. And the new batteries they're putting out that are multi-level batteries.
Right.
Where if you're using it a lot, you use one set of battery. If it's if you're using it a little bit, it goes to the lower power one, and it's got the multiple levels in it, which is kind of cool.
Right.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Chuck from Penfield, New York. Hiya, Chuck. What can we do for you?
Hi, guys. I have a question kind of not dealing with what you're talking about now, but I'm going to shoot it anyhow.
That's okay. We'll do a nice segue. Now for something completely different.
If I do a backup, if I do an incremental backup, and say I do it weekly or whatever, if I have a file that changes on a regular basis, shouldn't I be able to restore it to certain rev levels? Say I backed it up incrementally, five or six times. Shouldn't I be able to go back to the third rev change before the latest save?
It depends. It depends entirely on the software you use to do the backup.
Yeah, the answer is yes with an if.
Okay. Well, I'm seeing. When I do the restore, when I click on the file or right-click on the file, it has a tree of the files, and everything's listed in black. Those that are changed, it says changed, and that's in red.
Right.
So I'm assuming that it's, there's other levels of this, but I can't find any way that I might want to go back to earlier.
Well, again, Chuck, it depends on how you set up your incremental backup.
Mm-hmm.
The idea behind incremental backup is exactly what you're saying.
Yep.
So I do a full backup on Sunday, and then Monday through Saturday I do incrementals.
Yep.
If I want to go back to Wednesday, I can do that.
Yep, there you go.
Depending on the software you're using, they take incremental to mean I'm overwriting the Sunday backup with the latest, but only updating the latest files.
Which means it's done faster.
It's done faster.
That's what it's doing. Well, I guess I'm assuming, and maybe wrongly so, that it's keeping, on those that have changed, it's keeping the earlier versions in case you want to go, 3 days back or whatever, and pick that version up to restore.
Yep.
It may not be doing that, is what you're kind of saying.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's you're absolutely right. It should be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
It may not indeed be doing that. So the best thing to do is to, and I hate to tell you this, break out the documentation.
Well, I've tried to find a documentation. I'm not finding anything. Maybe it's time to change backup software.
That's certainly a possibility.
Yep.
Look for something that does true incrementals, or at least gives you that option.
Yeah, and it may be, too, I'm using the freeware version because I don't need all the bells and whistles that there's,
This may be a bell or a whistle that would be worth investing
in. Yeah, I would consider it more than a bell. I would consider it bread and butter. But
well, I would, too. I'm with you.
Yeah.
But that's, and of course, the nice thing about what yours is doing right now is that takes less space.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Right.
So, and I get that. I do get that.
On the other hand, space has never been cheaper.
Right.
Well,
exactly.
That's true. But I'm.
And so, what I. And you're running Windows, right?
Yeah, I'm Windows 7.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And I just back up to like a USB drive.
Right.
And I only back up my data files. I don't back up all the Windows stuff and all my.
Yeah, you might want to look into one of the online vendors. There's a few of those. There's Mozy, there's CrashPlan, there's Backblaze.
You mean backing it up online to a cloud?
Well, you can.
Yeah,
and
I don't want to do that either.
That's cost a fee, but
in my pocket,
I do know for sure that the CrashPlan software allows you to back up to local devices or to other machines in your house or to your buddy's house if he's into it.
Yeah.
And you can do that entirely for free using their software.
Okay. Okay. I mean, ideally, theoretically, industrially, when you do a backup, it should be then stored off-site somewhere.
Yes.
So if your world burns down, you can at least restore it from
your
tape.
You want to follow that.
In the old world, from the tape that's out in some kind of vault somewhere.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. The rule of backup is called the 3-2-1 rule. You want to have three copies of anything you care about.
Yep.
You want to have them on two different kinds of media.
Yep.
So that if your ability to read one kind goes south, you still can get it from the other kind.
Yep.
And one of them needs to be off-site.
Yeah, right. Don't back up the tapes, and then tapes are obsolete, and then you're...
Precisely.
Exactly right.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much. I'll continue to pursue this and maybe look for a different backup software. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
And as we always say, only back up the data you want to keep.
Exactly. We talk about that a lot. People say, well, I back up my entire hard drive. Well, and that's great. Because it's certainly fast to restore. The problem with that is if the reason you're restoring is because there's a problem in the registry, did you back up that problem?
Sure. You can happily archive all your viruses.
Exactly. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1, and now on Periscope.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
Sorry, Periscope people. I had to use both hands to put my headset down. They'll forgive me. They're good people.
That's right.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
That's right.
And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And we'll be more than delighted to talk to you on the air. And I'm going to set this here.
Gingerly.
because I have to write some stuff down because we have Don from Brighton on the line. Welcome, Don. What's up?
Hi, you guys were talking about battery life.
Yeah.
I think one of the best solutions is staying with the old Galaxy 4, which had removable batteries. I have an external charger and a total of 3 batteries.
Wow.
So when I'm traveling, I've got lots of battery life. I just swap batteries.
Yeah, we see that often, and it's kind of unfortunate that manufacturers have not stuck with the ability to hot swap a battery and keep others in reserve.
Oh, well,
S5 will do that.
Yeah, the Galaxy S5. I mean, my 5. I've got a charger that I bought through the manufacturer that plugs into the car, you know, lighter.
Yep.
And I mean, I have, you know, within, if I can, you know, say be down to, say, 40%.
Uh-huh.
And if I plug it in, and if I, you know, if I'm traveling some distance, say I'm going to be in the car for 20-25 minutes or more, believe it or not, this charges it so fast, it gets it back up to like 80-90% within 20-25 minutes.
He's talking about a battery charger for the external batteries.
Yeah, but then you got to carry around an extra battery.
Well, but the battery charger for the external battery, it's just about the size of the battery.
Yeah.
Not much bigger, and it holds it. Just a nice carrying case for the battery.
Yeah.
So all it takes me is about the 2 minutes it takes to change the battery and for the phone to reboot. And I'm up full charge.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, I agree with you.
I can do what you're doing. I plug that other charger, and I recharge my battery externally, and I don't have my phone tied up.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, it's exactly right. And I do both. I have what Dave has. I've got the wireless charger, and that's so I can just throw the phone on it, and it charges it up in the car as I'm going somewhere. But also, yeah, having a device that will charge your external batteries and then have those external batteries available for recharge, particularly when, for example, you're on an intercontinental flight or
yep.
a coast-to-coast yeah. flight.
Sure.
Like when I'm traveling, not in the car.
Right.
Or I'm out hiking.
Right. Right. And when I'm sitting...
Nice part, but the company seems to have stopped making it. I've been eligible for a new phone for 2 years, and I'm not about to change because
yep.
I love that convenience of a removable battery.
I'm with you. When I'm sitting in a strange airport, and everybody else around me is crowded around the two or three outlets.
Like an yeah. oasis.
Like a little oasis in the desert. I'm sitting there completely happy, drain my battery as much as I want, plug the thing, turn it off, swap batteries, start it up. Now I'm at 100% again.
I love that.
I can carry around three or four batteries and change them out regularly, and I never have to look at a charger until... I managed to finally get to a hotel 2 days later.
Right.
Has anyone come out with a new phone with that, or am I still stuck with my Samsung Galaxy 4?
No, there are several that are that way. It's getting fewer and fewer, however, because it's certainly much cheaper to solder in a battery than to provide a socket to plug it into.
But there
are still some out there that do that. I don't have any in the top of my head, but there are some out there.
If you do get to a phone that doesn't have one, you know, all hope is not lost. There are lots and lots of third-party external battery packs that are about the size of a paperback book, and you plug those either into the USB port on your computer or into the wall and charge them up, and then you can keep them in your laptop bag or in your briefcase or whatever bag you keep with you. And while you're driving or while you are in the air, you can plug your phone into those, and it will charge up your phone even while you're using it. You can use that. They typically have USB ports on the side of them, so you can charge up a couple of phones at once. You could charge up one phone. You could charge up a tablet. And it gives you multiple what I'll call phonefuls of charge per charge on that bigger battery. And the good news is those external batteries are getting cheaper all the time. They make a fantastic stocking stuffer for the holidays, if my wife is listening. and they are really nice.
Yeah, and the other thing that I like, and I should probably do this, I just realized what part of the problem with this is they can't hear.
They can't. They can hear us, right, but they can't hear the caller.
The other thing that I like is that there is a company now that's working with developing a device that does over-the-air charging. So you put one of these. Right now, it's just in homes.
Is this something Nikola Tesla was trying to do?
This is what Nikola Tesla did, actually.
Wireless charging.
Wireless charging. And what happens, unlike with the Qi, which is what I have in the back of this, where I have to actually put it down.
On a mat.
On the mat, yeah. What this does is it broadcasts it through the air. And as long as your phone is in, right now it's line of sight.
Yeah.
Right. But as long as your phone's in line of sight, it'll charge.
That's magical.
That is magic. And I want to see these in every airport. I want to see these everywhere.
Right.
You know, if we could see into the radio spectrum,
mm-hmm.
we wouldn't be able to see because there's
it's just
stuff
messy.
Going by constantly. Why not use that energy?
Right.
It's just energy. Why are we not using it? And this company, I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. I'll look it up in a little while. This company is actually using broadcast power.
Amazing.
I know. We've had science fiction stories that have told us by the year 2000,
right,
we have flying cars that worked on broadcast power. Now we're barely going to get phones that do that. And televisions, actually. They can put it on the back of a TV. And they've done all the testing that says, you know, it doesn't penetrate skin at all, so it's not going to cause cancer and all of that other stuff. So they've done all of that. And we'll see, as time goes on, I guess we'll see how much of that stuff makes it to the general public. But I'll tell you right now, it's a pretty cool idea, and I, for one, I'm looking forward to playing with it.
I would like to see phones and especially the new wearables like the watches and other things actually use. Watches have had this for years where they try and take the motion of your wrist and of your hand, and they call it an automatic movement. It's a little it's a little weight that's on a spindle, and it spins around and it charges up the watch. I'd love to see smart devices and phones also use that capability to keep or at least help maintain the battery charge while you're walking around.
Yep. Even if it only gave you an extra 10 minutes a day, that's 10 minutes you didn't have.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like those crank chargers that they, they talked about for years for emergency purposes. You sit down, you crank for 10 minutes, and it gives you a couple of minutes worth of talk time.
Right.
Well, if I'm walking around for, you know, a third of my day in my job, if I could have that extend my battery life, all the better.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. We had, I had one of those. Well, you have to actually hit the little icon. Okay, I get that. And apparently,
Nick's playing with Periscope. That's all right.
With Periscope.
He's got a new toy.
He's
got a new toy.
I'm having phoned it now.
Yeah, it is fun.
But the basic point here is that, I had one of those watches, and I never wound it, ever.
Right.
Right? I mean, you never had to do anything with it.
Just put it on.
And even if I only got an extra 15 minutes a day.
That's 15 more minutes than you had before.
And wouldn't it be cool if I could actually charge it, my watch, just by being in the room with the wireless charger, the Nikola Tesla charger?
I need to read more about this. I want to figure out how they're not melting the antennas.
How about that watch? The watch, though, they were, I haven't seen it out yet, that you, well, it's a band, literally, and it's a computer that you touch it, and it projects down on your wrist.
Oh. Yeah, that was a concept, but I want that.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Oh, yeah, there's a video on it. That, it's like a band, like a
Microsoft
Fitbit. A Fitbit.
Yep.
And you touch it, and it projects the screen down on your arm.
Okay.
And you can use your finger to start apps or anything else.
Interesting. So it's sort of like those old projection keyboards that would project it down on the desk.
And it does it onto your arm.
The only two problems with that.
Okay.
One is if you have a hairy arm.
Okay.
And two, sleeves.
Mm.
Right? So it works best on bare arms.
Right.
But it works, and that's, you know, you're a step in the right direction.
Okay.
Yeah. I would love to be able to say, I have no wires in my... We've talked about this before. Aside from the magic devices like the transporter...
Yep.
The big difference between Star Trek technology and our technology, no wires.
Right.
The only wires they had were the bee lights that fell from the ceiling when they got hit.
That's right. To make the sparks.
To make the sparks. But that was it. Other than that, they just had no wires. And that's what I want. I don't, you know, right now, I have no wires on here. Right. Because I have the Qi charger. But I still have to put it on the mat as opposed to anything else. Well, that's it. That music tells me that we are done for another week. I want to thank all the people who played on Periscope. And I want to thank Dave Enright, and I want to thank Dennis Worcester, who was gracious enough to come in and help.
Anytime,
don't go away. George will be here to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we are done for another week. I'm going to stop broadcasting in a second. We will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.